The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Welcome to Healthy Lifestyle. I'm Lorianne Kasdia. Our goal at Healthy Lifestyle is to inspire, educate, and empower you to fulfill a healthy emotional, spiritual, and physical life so you can feel empowered to live the life you have always wanted and dreamed. You know, we talk about taking time for yourself and taking care of yourself all the time on a daily basis and having a breath of fresh air. So today we have a breath of fresh air on talking about taking care of ourselves. We have the great Dr. Benjamin Schwartz. Dr. Benjamin Schwartz was named the Regional Director of Obstetrics and Gynecology for the North Well Health Eastern Region. Wow, you're killing me here, Doc. As well as the Chairman of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at North Well Health. You oversee the inpatient and outpatient care?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Gosh, that's not something you can say really quickly, and I usually speak really quickly, but you got to slow that down, right?
I'm impressed.
Thank you. You're impressed. You do it all the time. So. So talk to me about your program. You have a great, great, great program, and you've been with Northwell how long?
Almost 5 years now.
5 years. And when you were, it was what, 2015 you were?
Yep, in 2015 I joined Northwell Health.
Right.
It's a terrific time for us, particularly in Suffolk County in the eastern half of Long Island.
I love that. So when you're doing what you do, now you are specific to what area?
So I'm a gynecologic oncologist, which means I operate on women who either have gynecological cancers or may be suspected of having one.
Right.
But I oversee all of the obstetrics and gynecology programs for Northwell in the eastern region.
So all of the different hospitals, you oversee that program?
There are several in the eastern region. It starts at Glen Cove Hospital and then goes out east to Peconic Bay. And I oversee our OBGYN programs both in the hospitals as well as the clinical activities in our outpatient offices.
Oh, my. And you're also a surgeon, are you not?
I am. So I operate mostly with the Da Vinci robot, minimally invasive surgery.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Okay, we can.
The Da Vinci robot. What? Yep. Now, tell our listeners about that.
So most people, I think, incorrectly have this image of the robotic surgical platform as it's almost like C-3PO in Star Wars, where the
robot...
Wait,
hold on. It's not?
It's not.
Bummer.
C-3PO. It doesn't talk back. It doesn't have artificial intelligence.
Right.
But the capabilities of the device are terrific because it allows a surgeon to sit in a console, look through a 3D lens.
Sure.
And feel as if by manipulating your hands, you're actually reaching into the patient. And it allows you to manipulate surgical instruments in a way that we couldn't do before that is much more as if your hands were actually in the patient. It allows us to do very complex radical surgeries with tiny little incisions. The majority of patients that used to spend several days in the hospital can now go home the same day.
Wow.
And most patients describe very little, if any, pain postoperatively and can get back to their normal lives faster.
Is that because of the instrumentation being a lot thinner, a lot smaller?
Yeah, it's because the incisions are, in most cases, less than half an inch. Whereas before, to get our hands into the patient, we needed a much larger incision. Now we can do it through tiny ports.
Are there lots of them? Or, you know, before it was one large incision that you just kind of dive in. Now it's a lot of different incisions?
So that's such a terrific question. I'll tell you why. Like the iPhone, every few years, there's newer and newer versions of the Da Vinci robot. And at this point, for some of our operations, we'll use 3, 4, 5 small incisions. But the most newest version of the robot allows all of the instruments to just go through one incision, which is typically done through the base of the belly button. So when the patient gets done with surgery, and already some of our minimally invasive benign gynecologists at Huntington Hospital are doing these procedures, a patient, there would be no way to know that she had an operation because the only scar she has is in the base of her belly button.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really great, and patients love it. And of course, with less incisions, even with that, there's less pain.
But you still have a similar size team during the operation procedure, correct?
Yep, it takes a village.
Okay.
We haven't eliminated any of the staff in the operating room. It takes surgical technicians, nurses, anesthesiologists, nurse anesthetists, surgeons. We frequently will have physicians in trainings, the likes of fellows or residents and medical students from our Zirko School of Medicine at Hofstra University. But for those people that are concerned that maybe someone will be learning on them, the robotic platform is mostly used solely by the attending surgeon.
Right.
And others are able to see what's happening because we have several monitors in the room that they can watch and learn from.
That is amazing. Now, you speak about your team. You have this, I love this whole story. You have this wonderful process. Talk about the emails.
Sure. Thank you for asking. Fascinating thing that I'm blessed to be a very busy surgeon and do a lot of operations. I've done thousands. And over the years, I started to feel, as I think many of your listeners will understand, regardless of what profession they're in, I started to feel that something was a bit lost in that we were doing all the things we could to do our job as well as possible, but there was sort of a lack of a connection with the people around us. I think we sort of live in a world now where everyone has a smartphone in their face, and we're a bit disconnected as people.
Yeah.
A friend shared a story with me where he was having surgery, and the surgeon asked him to send an email to him ahead of the surgery to describe who he was. And when I heard the story, I was first jealous, because why didn't I think of that? But tried it out. And the very first patient was a young woman whose husband sent me an email to say, by the way, doctor, just so you know, my wife will never admit it, she's a in-the-closet Pink Floyd fan. And she doesn't want anyone to know amongst her friends because for some reason she's embarrassed. But if you could play Pink Floyd when she goes into the operating room.
Pink Floyd.
Okay. So I picked Comfortably Numb.
Great
because
song.
Because it just seemed so apropos for the moment. And when the patient heard the music as she was coming into the room, you could see there was a tear in her eye. There was a connection. And my staff knew that I was not a Pink Floyd fan and asked me, you know, where did that come from? And I told them the story. And they said, well, you know, we'd like to hear the emails too. You know, why, you know, can you please include us in this process? So quickly, I changed what I was doing. I asked the patient's families, could you please send me an email about who the patient is? But could you please write it as if you're speaking to the entire team? That was miraculous for us in the operating room in a way that I can't really describe without getting a little bit choked up. The first email was from a 13-year-old boy who had lost his mother. We were operating on his grandmother who had uterine cancer. And he wrote this very eloquent email about how his life was in turmoil and chaos, and the only normal thing that happened to him on a regular basis was Sunday meatballs with his Italian grandmother. And we got to get this right today. We got to do our best job because he can't imagine what life will be like without the meatballs.
Oh, my goodness.
And for a brief moment, we all sort of felt this unbelievable sense of meaning and awareness and attentiveness that we always hope to achieve in perfection. But it sort of gave us this sort of adrenaline surge moment. The next email on the same day was kind of overwhelming. Was written by a patient's husband who happened to be a nurse, who wrote something to the effect of, "We so appreciate all of you in the room today. We know the sacrifices that your families have made over the years. We know how hard you work. We know how much training you have to do. And we so respect you, and we need you in this one moment right now to please be on your A game for this person that we love so much." Not a dry eye in the room, I think. I think we all were kind of caught off guard by it. And over the year now that we've been doing it, with every single case, the emotions that are elicited amongst the team, it's almost gotten to the point where it's such an amazing affirmation and such an amazing reconnection between us and the patient that if a family forgets to do it, we actually kind of miss it and we feel almost like it's a letdown. But I think, you know, actually, without standing on a soapbox too much, maybe everyone in every industry should be a part of that. You know, maybe the guy who plans your financial plan should really understand that by doing well, the first person in the family will get to go to college. Or, you know, maybe the guy who's flying the airplane should know a little bit more about the people's lives that are in the back.
Aren't we a little bit better when we know and have a connection with the other people that we're affecting and touching and communicating with?
I can tell you that it is this magical thing. I'd like to say that our results in the operating room are so good that it's hard to really appreciate a significant difference. I'll also share with you the other thing that came out of that is that when you're the family and a loved one is going through the stress of a surgery, you really don't know what your role is supposed to be. You really don't. You feel almost like you're watching as a spectator, and you can't know what to do actively to make it better. And in asking families to write these emails, you feel powerless. Yeah. The patient feels a bit powerless.
Yes.
You know, they certainly weren't planning. In my line of work, most people don't expect that they're going to be meeting me and having surgery. So by asking the families to write these emails, we suddenly gave them an opportunity to actively participate in the surgery. It gave them this unique window into, I want to speak to each of you in the room and explain to you why this is so important to us.
Yes, you gave them a voice that they never would have had, and they wish they could say something to the group. I know I would. When you were telling the story, I was like, oh my God, that's totally brilliant. It allows me to communicate with people I may never see who have my loved one, their life in their hands. And so what a beautiful empowerment you've given the family. That must have reduced the amount of stress to a certain point, at a certain element, because they know at least they got the opportunity to say that.
You know, I really hope so. I believe that that's true. And thank you for saying those kind words. I think the one thing that we're starting to measure now is the feeling of wellness that our staff have when they participate in a program like this compared to rooms where they don't do it.
Yeah.
And while we don't know the results yet, I'd be willing to wager that we're going to find that by reconnecting with the people we're taking care of, despite all the other pressures we have on getting it right technically, gives people more value in coming to work and makes them look forward to coming to their job that day.
Sure, why not? It gives you a sense of value, like you had said, that value and importance of that everything matters. And even though technically maybe everything would be the same, it's the heart behind it. So you could be technically accurate, but not have that connection. Now you're connecting on a different level. And that's a connection of energy, which is very, very powerful. Very, yes. Very, very powerful. We speak about connection of energy here all the time. And yes. What you're doing is a connection of energy. So that's such a beautiful, when you told me that story, it resonated so deeply with me. I wanted to have you share it with the listeners. That is a wonderful thing. If everybody would do that and take the time to communicate and understand who they're working with. You know, when you look at someone and they have a sad face and you do that little act of kindness, we talk about that all the time here too, that little act of kindness of just holding the door and they just look up for a second and they had a scowl on their face, but then their eyes are smiling just for that moment. What you do is the same thing on a much grander level.
Oh, that's so kind. Thank you.
You make people's eyes smile and make their value and their worth right there. There's no further validation needed because they know right then and there when they hear those stories, there's that connection.
Yep.
So that is just so beautiful. And thank you for doing that. And
thank you.
Again, Allie is here, won't talk on the air even if I tried really hard. You continue to bring amazing doctors from the Northwell family, and I am blown away at the caring that all of the various doctors have. This is such a beautiful, beautiful story.
Thank you. Thank you.
If you had one thing to tell the listeners, anything at all, what would that be?
Wow. So that's a very big question. I probably need several hours to do that right. You know, I think we're excited to be able to say now that the Northwell Health System has invested a lot in our infrastructure, in our facilities in Suffolk County. I think that, you know, as a kid, I grew up in Islip. And I remember a time where if you were routine health issue, you went to the local hospital. But if you were really sick or something was really complicated, you had to get on the Long Island Railroad and go to New York City.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's really important for people to be more aware of the programs that we've created.
Right
in our backyards. Yeah. And the literally hundreds of millions of dollars that are going to be invested now in new facilities.
Don't think of as Long Islanders. I grew up here,
yep.
Born and bred here in Dix Hills. And so
yep.
To be thinking that that's where you're bringing it, that is totally amazing. Yet another resource right in our backyard that you don't have to go, oh, I don't want to go to X hospital. I'll only go to these hospitals. I'm finding that continuity in the Northwell Health System.
Yep. We have training programs now. And we have, for those people that don't know, we have some of the most phenomenal physician and nursing and administrative talent in our building now.
My brother's a neonatologist.
He is?
Yeah. He's down in Louisiana. He did the first Southeast Central Regional neonatal unit.
Wow.
So that's a great, I obviously have an affinity to that. But yeah, it's and I appreciate the fact that Northwell is investing those type of dollars into the region. That's
yes.
great. You're bringing back medicine as I used to know it, where I really knew my doctor.
Yes.
And I don't feel like a number anymore. And I really do appreciate that element. And I think your email example is yet another example to me that that's something that I see a thread that connects all of you.
I think the other thing I would mention is that, you know, I'm a cancer doctor, and I'm always dismayed that even folks that are living in such a sophisticated area like New York don't always go to the doctor regularly. And I worry sometimes that large health systems are that people are fearful that they won't be easy to navigate or that they won't have a personal relationship with their doctor. And speaking as a doctor who was in private practice and now wearing a Northwell Health badge, I can tell you that that characterization could not be farther from the truth, that the relationships that we have with our patients is actually better and closer because the health system has allowed physicians to really not have to worry about all the things that we had typically had to worry about when we were running a business and to really focus on being the doctor and having a relationship with patients. And I feel like my relationship with my patients is better than it's ever been. And I hope that your listeners that haven't been to the doctor in a while, particularly the women out there that haven't been to the doctor in a while, will take this as a bit of a wake-up call to go and see their doctor.
Really, really important to go see your doctor every single year and get those tests done, especially, and I'm going to put a point in there for mammographies and have your GYN medical care taken care of. It's really important. It could save your life.
Yeah, and we're also excited to announce to the folks that live out in our areas that Northwell Health has made women's health a real priority. And when we say women's health, it doesn't necessarily mean just OBGYN. We have a team of specialists, including heart doctors and lung doctors and gastroenterologists and skin doctors and psychologists, bone specialists, that really have created a career of focusing on their specific specialties, but specifically as relate to women. And because obviously taking care of women is not exactly the same thing as taking care of men. Women are very different,
sure.
Particularly as it comes to their health. And we are bringing those that subspecialty.
We're built a little different.
Yeah, you have different parts. That's for sure.
Can't put us on the Toyota line, you know? We were different.
Well, you're talking to a gynecologist, so I can relate to that completely. But I would just say that as people start to look for care in our communities, they're going to start to see now more and more, particularly your female listeners, that we have specialists specifically designed to their needs and not just to men and women alike.
Doctor, thank you so much for being on. It's been an absolute pleasure. You're extraordinary.
You.
I really look forward to having you back again.
Thank you.
You are listening to Healthy Lifestyle. I'm Lorianne Kasdia, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Healthy Lifestyle. I'm Lori Ann. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas on topics, guests you'd like to hear more about, please email us at healthylifestylewithla@gmail.com. And of course, we always ask you to follow us on social media at Healthy Lifestyle with LA. We love hearing from you, and we answer every email and post personally. So we appreciate our listeners, and we've had many guests on as a result of you. So thank you for listening and joining us. So today, to continue in greatness and Northwell Care and Health, we have Dr. David Chaliff on. He is the chief of neurosurgery, like Superman, I think it is. So you've been with, welcome to the show, David.
Thank you for having me.
It's pleasure, pleasure. So you've been with Northwell Health for how long?
Well, I was at North Shore LIJ before they even merged, okay, since 1986. So I've been around a long time.
A little bit of time. There you go. So how did you...
33 years.
Wow. That is a long time. You're
not very including consistent. My residency of 7 years. So.
And where did you do your residency?
At NYU.
At NYU.
So I've been doing neurosurgery for 40 years. It's hard to believe. Wow. I feel like I just started.
You look like a baby.
Thank you.
So how? What was your journey over here to Northwell Health? How did you get there?
Well, I was in private practice at North Shore LIJ, and I saw the hospitals merge, and I was recruited to come into the department about 15 years ago, and with the help of some of the administrators and some of the other doctors, I helped form a program to treat brain aneurysms there, and we called ourselves the Brain Aneurysm Center, and it grew and grew and grew. The department grew, Northwell grew, and I was part of this whole growth pattern. We had a residency program, and through it all, we saved thousands of lives, which is really what I want to talk to you about,
yeah,
what we do and how we touch lives.
You can tell. You can tell the admiration also that you have with the other doctor, Dr. Schwartz, who was, yeah, here when you guys were talking. It was really nice to see the colleagues speaking the way that they did. Yeah. I love the story that you were conveying with each other, that Dr. Schwartz had a patient who ended up in your department.
Right. You know, one of the new initiatives we have is treating stroke. That's under the umbrella of neuroscience.
Right.
And one of the cutting-edge ways of treating stroke is by going in with a catheter and doing what's called a thrombectomy, of taking the blockage out of the artery.
Okay.
And one of Dr. Schwartz's patients had a stroke and was really going down and was intervened on in the middle of the night. They did a thrombectomy, and she's normal now. So it was a real success story. So I'm in a position of growth, and I'm building this department, and we're introducing new programs, new operations. Thrombectomy is an example. Aneurysm surgery, which is really my wheelhouse.
I was going to say aneurysm surgery is your specialty, right?
Correct. Aneurysms and brain tumors, but it's amazing, but I've operated on over 2,000 patients with aneurysms over the years. It added up.
Wow.
And the aneurysm treatment has changed over the years. When I started, the only way to take care of an aneurysm was to go in through open brain surgery and put a clip on the neck of the aneurysm through an operating microscope. And then in about 20, 25 years ago, in the mid-90s, a new technology emerged that has completely changed the field. And that is similar to putting a stent in the heart by going in through the groin with a microcatheter into the aneurysm. Coils and stents can be put in, wow, without opening the head.
So my goodness.
So we've introduced that technology, and my colleagues do it.
So my grandfather passed of an aneurysm years and years and years ago. And my uncle, my father's oldest brother, also passed of an aneurysm, again, years and years and years ago, years before you were even speaking about the old technology. So this is near and dear because it runs in my family. So I'm like, I'll be visiting just to make sure I'm good. But that you do it that way without doing it. And that's all I remember, is that it would have been brain surgery. And back then, you know, talking.
Now it's done both ways. And there are a variety of factors which would guide us down either road.
Right. And what makes someone, can you predetermine aneurysms? I was checked because it runs in my family, so.
The only people we really screen, like a colonoscopy or a mammography, are people who have a family history or some people who have certain types of kidney diseases.
Okay.
I believe the day will come in the not so distant future where people will be screened for aneurysms. Because when we find aneurysms before they rupture, the treatment is much safer.
Right.
When an aneurysm ruptures, it's a cataclysmic event and it's very, very dangerous.
Yeah, sure. Sure. So, and you think that's going to be in the near future, yes?
Probably.
I mean, so it becomes,
there's a lot of angles to it. It's, you know, how are you going to get 2 million people in Suffolk County into an MRI scanner? There's logistics, there's finances, but the day will come.
Well, they probably said that about mammography, and now look at what we're doing. So so we'll check back with you in a couple of years, and okay, you'll have that answered because you solve problems anyway, right?
I try.
There you go, Doc. So what kind of training is required to become a neurosurgeon? Because people, you know, we used to say, oh, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. And now we say, because it's more accurate, well, you don't have to be a neurosurgeon, because that's really technical work that you're doing.
These days, the training is as follows. It's a 7-year residency program, and usually followed.
So let me back up. So you go to college, and then you go to med school, and then you do 7 years residency.
It never ends.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Wow, that's a lot of training.
You go to college, you go to med school, then you do a 7-year training. It's not over.
Right.
Wait a second.
Still working.
Then you have to do a fellowship, usually,
okay,
1 to 2 years. And then when you finish all that, you're a junior attending. So it's up the ladder, down the ladder, up the ladder, down the ladder. And you know what it all adds up to? Is the development of a skill set and getting good at something. It's almost like being an apprentice as a violin maker. It takes years to get good at it. And
sure,
when you first go out doing it yourself, you get better and better and better. There are all types of angles to it. It's not only the technical abilities. It's relating to people. It's the judgment. It's decision-making. It's humanity. There's a lot of angles to what I do,
to what all
doctors do.
Yeah, I get that. Like I said earlier in the show, my brother's a neonatologist, and he used to order all of these tests. There were, let's just say, 25 different tests. Now he may order 2 or 3 because through experience, he knows what symptoms would cancel out certain test requirements.
Right.
And that just takes experience, time, recognition, intelligence to be able to do that. So not only does he save the patient a lot of time, but he's not charging for different tests that aren't required. And it gets him to the answer because he's seen it so many times. I used to have colitis, and years and years and years ago, to have that diagnosed was virtually impossible. It was no less than 15 doctors, and they couldn't tell me what I had. And then finally I walked into this room with this doctor that was recommended to me over in Huntington Hospital doctor. And as soon as I walked in and described the symptoms, he hadn't done any paperwork. As soon as I described the symptoms, he goes, oh, I know what you have. And it was such a relief, but he had seen it over and over and over again that it was in his wheelhouse. And that's why I adore specialists, because that's what they do day in, day out. And they really get good at it, like what you do. Over 2,000 surgeries. That's amazing.
You know what it all adds up to? Touching lives. It's not all about the technical abilities. And I was granted great technical abilities and judgment. But it's about touching lives. It's about decision making.
Yeah.
I think being a surgeon is half technical and half decision making.
Sure.
What to do, when to do it, how to do it. And another thing that I think I learned over the years is how to speak to people, how to understand people, how to understand families. I think I'm part of psychiatrist also, because we deal with life and death. We deal with some big issues in neurosurgery. We deal with cancer. We deal with malignant brain tumors. We take care of people with strokes, with aneurysms. And when you cannot lose your humanity.
Yeah.
So it's not all about the training and the fancy equipment we have and the microscopes. In the end, it's about sitting down with either a patient or a wife or a husband or a brother or a sister, family members, and communicating. And I didn't get any training in that. It came naturally. And I think I'm at the top point of that now in my career.
Yeah.
Well, it's so important.
It is important because you feel more empowered as someone who when you're watching a loved one go through something and you're trying to intake all that information, more information is empowering. So I can't do anything to help anyone. I can't help anyone who has a medical issue. That's not where my wheelhouse is. So having the information allows me to better understand it. So it keeps me calm. Keeping family calm allows us to keep patient calm. The patient being informed and you informing the patient, that communication level is so important. Again,
it's critical.
Another thread I find common in the doctors coming out of Northwell. You all agree that education for the patient is critical.
And family, of course.
And family. Yes, yes, yes.
Right.
And that allows everyone to calm down, because the more you know about it, the less you stress about it, the less you're fearing. So it's the fear that makes you so nervous. You don't know what's going to happen. There are certain things that are absolutely out of our control, and sometimes universe takes over and we can't really do anything much about that. But definitely having that information empowers us as much as we can be empowered in that critical moment, right?
It's very important. Can I tell you a quick story?
I'd love story.
My nephew wants to be a neurosurgeon. I guess I influenced him, my brother's son, and he is in the process, as we speak, interviewing at the various programs to get accepted into neurosurgery. And last week he said to me, what's the toughest part? The call, the years of training? And I said, the toughest part is the decision-making when you have a human life and a family in your hands,
yeah,
that you have to get it right. That's the toughest part. That's what it all boils down to for me.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of weight on your shoulders, don't you think?
Absolutely.
And every case is different, right?
Of course. Of course. Every case is different. But I can't tell you how much I love it. I love doing it. I love going to work every day.
Yeah. I can see that.
It's totally true. I'm not just saying it. And I built a very big program in North Shore with the help of a lot of people.
I'm
very happy to be there.
Yeah, that's great to let everybody know to send them to you. And how do you balance this workload? Do you have a private life? It sounds like you spend 24/7 at the hospital.
No. I very much believe in balance. And if there's no balance, you will crack.
Yeah.
And you won't be a good doctor, or you won't be a good author or actress or whatever you do.
Agreed.
And I have tried to balance my life. I've tried to carve out time for family. I've tried to carve out time for my own interests. And I have a few that I've...
Like
I like exercising. I like bike riding. I like swimming. And I like art. So I've tried to buy books on art and go to museums and galleries. And I love sports. And I've tried to, you know, continue these interests, and the balance between these various interests I have and neurosurgery, I think, makes me better in both arenas.
Yeah, don't you think that by stepping away from what you do for work and putting yourself into a sports environment or some kind of hobby, it allows your mind to kind of settle down and some answers come during that? I use meditation personally.
Absolutely, but there's one little problem with it these days. It's called the cell phone.
Yes, they have to shut that button.
It's hard. And plus, in my new role as a leader, I have the cell phone right on top of me all the time.
Sure.
So it's hard to completely detach, but I think balance is very important. And I tell anyone training in neurosurgery, or training in any realm for that matter,
right,
whatever you do, to balance your life and never lose your interest in life, because you will be stronger in your profession.
Sure. Sure. If you had to tell our listeners anything, any one thing, and I know you were here before when I asked the same question, what would that be? What would you tell us?
That's a big question. I would say that from my perspective as a physician, as a neurosurgeon, I have seen that life is very sacred and very brief. I've seen a lot of disease and cancer and stroke and a lot of illness in my career. So my advice would be, live to your fullest, stay healthy, take care of your health, avoid toxicity in everything you do. And this is not a dress rehearsal, and to really enjoy this beautiful life that we've been given.
I love that. Yes. And I totally agree with you. We say here on Healthy Lifestyle, find the joy. Got to find the joy. We're supposed to do that while we're here. We're supposed to learn.
It's hard to do sometimes because you get caught up in the little things that are irritating, but there's a lot out there to enjoy between family and interests and career, and not to forget that the sky is beautiful and that it's beautiful to be alive.
Yeah.
So that's my advice. It sounds crazy, but that's
my
advice.
It doesn't sound crazy. It sounds absolutely in line with what Healthy Lifestyle is about. We really want people to find the joy, find that health. Take a moment for yourself, and you'll hear me say that. I say it every week. Just even taking a moment to look at what this fall sky looks like, and the leaves falling and the leaves changing, things like that
make
a difference.
You know, I've seen lives change in an instant in various forms in neurosurgery. Healthy people, and all of a sudden their lives are changed. It's changed me. It's made me more appreciative of the little things, of the leaves falling, of the sky, enjoying a bike ride, enjoying my children, my wife, enjoying just driving to work, the little things.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of beauty out there, and we live such a high-paced, information-packed, connected life that it's crazy.
Isn't it interesting? It's connected life in such an unconnected way. Because we're not really connected. We can speak to each other very rapidly. That's true. But sometimes we lose that face-to-face conversation. And there's nothing like a handwritten letter and face-to-face conversation where you can look into somebody's eyes and see their soul.
One of the things I really like is music. And I'm by the way, you mentioned Pink Floyd. I think that they're great. But I really like Bob Dylan a lot. And he has a song called I'm Not There.
Oh, sure.
And it's a somewhat of an obscure song, but in the whole cell phone environment and the interconnectivity, everyone's connected, but they're not there.
Yes.
They're not there.
Be present.
Sometimes two people are with each other and they're not there.
Yes.
So I think of that sometimes.
Be present.
Don't be I'm not there. Be there.
Be there. Be present. That's the present of it, is being present. So thank you so much,
Dr.
We've
drifted a little from neurosurgery.
No, it's all right. It's all connected. It's all connected. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you all for joining us today on Healthy Lifestyle. My heart is lifted by sharing this time with you. And I want to thank my guest today and, of course, our producer, Michael. And join us next week and next time on Healthy Lifestyle. In the meantime, follow us, send us comments to us on social media at Healthy Lifestyle with LA. Remember, do a little something for yourself. It's really important. Every single day, it starts there. Just create a habit, create a new balance. You are the best because everyone else is taken. So thank you again for joining us on Healthy Lifestyle. I'm Laurie Ann Casdia. Until next time, show up for you and show up big.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.